My weekday fix? Darling, it has to be Radio Gorgeous.
I like New York in June. How about you? I like a Gershwin tune. How about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. I like potato chips, moonlight motor trips. How about you?
Hello and welcome to Radio Gorgeous. My name's Josephine Pembroke.
And I'm Donna Freed.
And we're here today to talk about what's coming up, and we're going to talk about gorgeous gossip, and we're going to talk about, you know, who our guests are. So first of all, what we're going to be talking about on our gorgeous gossip today, Donna and I, we're going to talk about myths of the menopause, because there are many, like my stomach's getting fatter. And we're going to find out whether that is true, you know, whether the hormones changing, you know, because I always think, anyway, we'll talk about that. But also, the guest on Gorgeous Gossip today is, you went along to Notting Hill Gate to the How To Academy, didn't you?
That's correct.
The How To Academy is all about learning, but it's for our age, isn't it?
Well, our age and teenagers. They have whole workshops for teenagers. The How To Academy has workshops, weekends, short courses on anything from how to make a bike, how to make a movie, how to start a business, how to read a certain author, how to understand artists.
So what night did you go to?
I met Frances Wilson herself, who's one of the founders of the How To Academy. She was interviewing Lyndall Gordon, who's a very, very renowned biographer. She writes definitive biographies on T.S. Eliot, Henry James, Emily Dickinson, Virginia Woolf, etc.
So people that have died, so yeah.
Yes, but this night, and there have been other sort of in-depth nights with her, but this night was an in-depth interview and conversation with her with regards to her memoir about her mother. And it was a wonderful evening. It was a beautiful summer's evening. I rode my bike there, and there was a group. It happened to be all women, a group of Lyndall's readers, one of whom included her daughter, which was quite sweet. But yeah, she had a bunch of people who were interested in her and her book. And we sat in a beautiful room, which is an artist studio. Comfortable chairs. There was wine on offer. I was riding my bicycle, so I just had water, a couple of nibbles, and literally this real
in-depth. So you can go to these fabulous place, the How To Academy, and you can learn things in a really stimulating environment. So now let's talk about Author of the Week. I interviewed Tessa Bowes. And she used to work on the Telegraph, but now she's had kids and she thought, right, I want to write a book. She's really interested in kind of research because she's a journalist. And she thought, I'm really interested to find out about housekeepers. Yeah. I'm talking about housekeepers in the sort of Downton Abbey period. So
right.
Victorian times, you know, and also, in fact, she goes actually from Georgian times. She interviews six women from Georgian times all the way up to the 20th century because people still had servants then. And she came over to Radio Gorgeous and sat on the red sofa and she talked about three different women. She said the main thing is that housekeepers, they have to be very discreet. They have to be very good at maths. They have to be very hardworking. They have to also be a bit middle class because in a way they can't be so working class because they're dealing with kind of quite complicated things. They really were the people that ran the country houses. The butler didn't hardly do anything. You hear about it in the interview.
Interesting.
But the things that she found about was that the stories that went wrong, because they're obviously more dramatic and more interesting. So we're going to hear about women who stole or women that got pregnant or women. Yeah.
Ooh.
So, no, it's really interesting. So she said it was actually reading the diaries was quite mundane, but she found interesting women. Then the other person, the third person we've got on this week is we've got an international renowned psychic. Her name is Julie Wells.
And Elizabeth Kinder interviewed her.
Yes, Elizabeth Kinder, who is our music and psychic specialist.
Yes, but she's doing a whole series on intuition.
Yes.
So she explores intuition.
Because women naturally have it, and that's why we're always called the witches, you know. And actually, I was saying the other day, I had intuition. I went to a cash point, and I didn't take the money out. Have you ever done that? You put your card in, then you walk away. a little thing popped up in my head saying, you've got to go and get the ticket. And I thought, what ticket? What piece of paper? I didn't know. So I walked away. But guess what? I had left the money. And luckily, someone handed it in. But I should have trusted my intuition. So we're going to talk about what it is that makes you psychic. How are you psychic? She says she's in tune with a higher force. And she's going to talk about how it affects the whole of the community. So it's really interesting. Yeah. So let's now go to the How To Academy. And who are you talking to?
Frances Wilson and Lyndall Gordon, as well as two attendees to the event.
Give me a thrill.
I'm Frances Wilson. I'm a writer, but I organise literary and cultural events for the How To Academy, organised around close reading seminars and small intimate groups.
And How To Academy, tell me more about the How To Academy, if you can.
The How To Academy was born, it was born exactly a year ago. It was a collaborative effort between me, my partner Paul Keegan, and a friend of ours, John Gordon. And the idea was to run events around London, which was quirky and unusual, and would anything from how to understand your dog, how to invest in the online gold market, how to read James Joyce, the kind of events that no one else was doing.
Absolutely,
which would provide a kind of social hub as
and
well.
Yeah, and we're in this lovely room. Tell me about this. It's gorgeous.
The room is an artist studio, built as an attachment to a house in Notting Hill. It's a studio that we use a lot for literary events, and it's lovely and bright and airy.
Yes, and this evening we've had the pleasure of your conversation with Lyndall Gordon.
Yes.
Introduce yourself, and you're a biographer.
I'm a biographer. I've been writing for a number of years. I've been always very interested in the creative life, which means the inward life. Of course, the external life has to coexist. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in telling a story about how the creative life comes into being. Obviously, there's no way to explain it. I think that one can try and get close to it. It started out when I was a student at Columbia University in New York, when I was doing a thesis on T.S. Eliot's early years. That became my first book, and I was lucky enough to have a supervisor, Zach Van Berkovich, who encouraged me to make it a book. And in those days, it was, I think, a fortunate time to begin in biography because publishers wanted biographies. And I then went on to write about women's lives primarily. Virginia Woolf, Charlotte Bronte, A Passionate Life, Mary Wollstonecraft, and most latterly, Emily Dickinson, Lives Like Loaded Guns.
And most recently?
And most recently I wrote a mother and daughter memoir, Divided Lives, Dreams of a Mother and Daughter.
And it seems to me that in that memoir, you tell the story of your very intimate relationship with your mother.
Yes, it was an unusual relationship in that my mother did have a chronic illness, and I was with her a lot as a sort of sister. She called me carer. And I felt it a privilege to have a very special education with her, because she was a great reader. She used her illness. Mm. I was quoting Virginia Woolf, saying that great oaks are uprooted in us by the act of illness. The idea being that illness is not just a terrible thing, it is potentially a gain in that you can cultivate a subversive, a questioning point of view because you are detached from ordinary life. And my mother certainly cultivated that. She was daring in her thoughts, and she gave me courage.
It strikes me in your writing of biography that you are re-immersing yourself in that privileged, intimate relationship.
Yes,
with your
Yes. Although it's not identification, it is, as we were discussing this evening, a matter of being interested in certain issues. There is an intellectual interest.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that you have to be interested in these issues because you've got to live with this person in this very peculiarly intimate way for a couple of years.
As you did with your mother.
Yes, but it's a re-immersion in that intimacy. And you do this with one subject after another. Hard to come to an end because you've got to know that person.
Yeah.
But then you do. And there's sometimes a hiatus, and then you begin to cultivate that strange closeness to someone else in the past.
And for you, Frances, how do you come to your subjects? Because you've written about the captain of the Titanic. Mm.
Dorothy Wordsworth.
And Dorothy Wordsworth.
I write about people who are problems to me. Mm-hmm. I can't work out why it is that they did what they did, mm-hmm. why it is that they lived in the way that they lived.
There's positive non-identification.
Yes, it is. It is. It's absolutely that. People. I don't think I could write about someone I intensely identified with.
Why would you?
I wouldn't intellectually be able to do it. I need that distance. And I want to wrap myself around someone's otherness and someone's strangeness.
Yeah. Life is filled with all kinds of different people. How boring if we were all the same.
Yeah,
and how wonderful
to... Emily Dickinson poem.
Yeah. And how incredibly wonderful to be able to really illuminate someone else's as much as you can as a biographer.
I feel so honored to be able to live my life like this. There's nothing I'd rather do.
Thank you so much. What are some more events that you're going to be working on?
Well, this autumn we're going to run a whole series of close reading events again in the studio, and hopefully Lyndall will come back.
I'd be glad to.
And do some more Emily Dickinson and perhaps some Mary Wollstonecraft.
I would be glad to. Yes.
That would be wonderful.
The intimacy of this in this beautiful room is very special because really interesting people come.
Yes.
That's what I think is special.
Yes.
And what they all say is there's nothing else like this in London. It's so unusual and it's so stimulating.
It really is. It really is. It's been a fantastic evening.
Oh, I'm glad
Thank you
came.
Both so much. And you're
My name's Grania Lamphy. Hello.
Hi. And what drew you to this How To Academy event this evening?
I think basically I was very interested in Emily Dickinson poetry, and Lyndall is just a wonderful voice, and I came a couple of weeks ago, nearly 3 weeks ago, and spent an evening, a wonderful evening, hearing all about Emily Dickinson, reading her poetry with Lyndall Gordon, and just enjoyed it immensely. And from that I was then inspired to go away and read Divided Lives. And hence I came here this evening, because it seemed like the sort of the final chapter, really, for me.
Yeah.
So it's been really enjoyable to hear her speak. And I do love her work. So it's not often you get that close to somebody you admire their work so much.
Yeah. Yeah, because we were sitting in a room with
just
eight
chatting.
Women chatting.
Just chatting.
And Frances really drew out...
everybody in and brought out some very salient points of the book. And I think for me, the book will be richer for it.
Absolutely.
Because I'll hear Lyndall's voice now as I'm reading it. So I think that's another wonderful merit to being here this evening. But I've been to quite a few of these events and they've all been, you know, extremely, extremely interesting. Some of them are a lot longer, mm-hmm. you know, from 9 o'clock in the morning till 6 p.m. But you come away and your brain's just buzzing and it's just fantastic.
Hi, I'm Joy Moreno.
What brought you to How To Academy tonight?
I've been very interested in reading Lyndall Gordon's other biographies, and I thought, wow, she's actually written something that is about her own life.
Yeah.
And I'm halfway through that, I'm really intrigued at the parallels with that and the works on the work on Emily Dickinson. So I have actually got all her books and I'll be reading them all throughout the summer.
Wow.
But because I'm writing a book myself, as I mentioned, a lot of those points she made really do resonate with what I'm trying to achieve. So I found that very refreshing and encouraging.
Yes. Yeah, because it was both... I think you said... Can we talk a little bit about what you're writing about? Because you said you're writing about three mothers.
Yes.
And it is also in part your story. So it seems similar in that it's both autobiography...
Yes.
Biography.
Biography.
You know, exactly, biography of people close to you and stuff. And it's very... I write a bit of memoir, and it can it can get very conflicting.
Oh, extremely.
Yeah, and where to place yourself and where, you know.
Because you want to disappear. You want to disappear yourself, actually, completely, and not be in it. And that's very... A writer that I'm very fond of is Murakami, Haruki Murakami. Yeah. And I like the way that he pares everything down to sort of dull minutiae. But he throws such fascinating facts at that you think, hang on a minute, he's written that in such a dull way, but he's telling you something incredible, you know, a man stuck down a well. That's
Yes, I remember, yes, the wind-up bird. Yes.
Yeah, that style is just beautiful for biography and autobiography, because you don't have to lament, be full of self-pity and...
Yeah. Let me do that. As a reader, I want to say, me do that.
Yeah, exactly. That's for me to decide.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I thought Frances's comments about my work and saying, but that character is really awful. How can you... She said, you must present the facts. Present the facts and let other people make up their mind. Don't guide them, you know, like pop music.
Yeah. Well, and also we all respond to things...
Yeah.
As we respond.
Exactly. So if people feel manipulated.
Yeah, exactly. But and also, you know, I mean, I don't, there's no prescribed response to one's life.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
You know, it's as I experience it. I'm not telling you what to do.
Absolutely.
Anyway, well, thank you so much.
That's okay.
And
nice to meet you.
Thanks very much. So the How To Academy, how do you contact them?
Just go to their website.
Fantastic. Now, let's talk about five menopausal myths debunked. Mm. And the first one is menopause makes you fat. And this article, it says, I'm really sorry. It doesn't. I think it's just something to do with being middle-aged. You know, it's not hormonal.
Right. So it's not hormones. It's just age.
Yeah, it's just age. Ah. It says just...
So it could happen to men as well.
Yeah.
Which it does.
It does. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you just thicken around the middle as you age.
Yeah, exactly. It just says daily exercise, you know. Just keeping on top of it. But I've really noticed that my body shape has changed, you know. Mm-hmm. Everything, I remember Marilyn Monroe said everything kind of gravity. And everything's like gone south. My face has gone thinner. I've lost fat off my cheeks. And in fact, I meet people I haven't seen for ages and they go, you've lost weight. But no, I think it's just that my face has got thinner.
Yeah.
And my ass has got fatter. You said you feel the fattest you felt for ages.
I do. I do. Just because I've done no exercise and did nothing but eat all summer.
Okay.
And then I've had friends visiting. And I've done nothing but cook and eat.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking. To me, you always look the same. You know, it's our idea of fat is ridiculous.
Yeah, but no, I'm noticing this is there. I'm noticing not only on me as I age, but other women. Instead of your butt sticking out, now you have like the front butt. It's like you have a flat butt, and your stomach sticks out where it used to be flat stomach, and your butt stuck out.
I've never ever had a flat stomach. Ever. I've always had a pot belly.
Well, I've always had a paunch, but you know, my butt was always more distinguishing.
Yeah.
It's not a good
now
look.
It's getting round.
The reverse butt.
Yeah. Oh God.
All right, not blaming it on hormones.
Menopause starts at 50. Not true. It usually starts between 45 and 55, but it can start as early as your 30s or as late as your 60s, which had happened to me. But I really think it's happening to me because I've had the hot flushes recently.
Mm.
But I'm now taking the menopause cream and I haven't had one hot flush.
Mm.
So it's really good cream with estrogen in. You just rub it on and it means you don't have to take HRT. And I'm finding I have no hot sweats. Menopause symptoms are only physical. So they're saying that...
That's what I thought. And I thought I wasn't perimenopausal.
Yeah.
Which I think I am 47. I still get my period.
Yeah.
You know, and it's still regular as clockwork. It's a lot lighter. So I thought, oh no, I don't have any of the symptoms of menopause. Well, then I start reading things, you know, the mental things that, you know, truly mental things.
Yeah.
That people do. I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize. But yes, some of the things I thought were just me being nutty, apparently. I can blame that on hormones.
Well, they say that there are brain changes leading to physical symptoms, and it can be you can feel emotional, up and down, depression. It's like
the mood swings, the anger.
Yeah, but haven't we? I've always had those. I mean, I can't tell.
But now we can blame it on menopause.
Okay. But they also said the physical symptoms are breast soreness. I haven't had that. Vaginal dryness. Well, I thought that was just because I wasn't turned on. And it says depression, but I had that episode. I mean, as in, I've had up and down mm-hmm. all my life. I can't really say that it's like it's worse now. But you're saying it's your worst now for you.
Yeah.
Another thing they say is menopause. People say menopause causes urinary incontinence.
Apparently. I thought that was having kids. Your pelvic floor.
Yeah,
went.
But you're right. They're saying it's age. It's literally kids, and also just keep doing the Joan Collins exercises. Joan Collins.
Your Kegels.
She does them every day. Pull in, pull up. Imagine it's a lift. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, she always says, which makes me laugh in the Joan Collins Book of Beauty, do it at the bus stop. And I was thinking, Joan Collins.
When was she at the bus stop? Yeah.
She must have been at one once. Nice to think she's pulling her muscles in. But I found since I've started doing yoga, I'm fine. How about you?
Oh, anyway, they say if it wasn't funny, if you go out at night, it wasn't funny unless you pee a little.
Yeah, but if I go on
big a... big hearty guffaw.
Yeah, if I laugh a lot and if I go on a child's trampoline, it just...
or any trampoline. Yeah. Doesn't have to be a child.
Well, yeah, the only ones I got... The water just floodgates
drops.
Open. Yeah. Oh, that happens
Oopsie.
To you?
Yes.
Oh, good. So it's not just me.
Well, and you can tell it happens to everybody because anytime you see somebody in the supermarket pushing a trolley and they stop to sneeze, they always like put their legs together.
Yes.
Yeah. You've seen it. Yeah. Like, oh, wait, I'm going to sneeze. Yeah. Okay, close your legs.
Leakage. Leakage. I had leakage so badly once because my muscles were so bad about 2 years ago, in fact. I just had to wet myself.
Yeah.
I just had to let it go.
Oopsie bups.
And it went all down my boots, you know. Oh, it was winter, so it was everything.
Oh, and then it froze.
Yeah, but it was just like, I just thought, I can't hold it in. But I must say, recently, I'm, you know, getting better. Another thing they say is menopause kills your sex life. Menopause does not rob you of your mojo. Many women feel a newfound sense of creativity and heightened self-confidence during midlife. Mm. I'm looking forward to that. So they're saying that decreased estrogen levels can, you know, give you vaginal dryness, but try using a lubricant and they say that you can still have a good sex life.
Well, because one of the things that happens when estrogen, progesterone leave, guess what comes in? Testosterone.
So you might get a bit more
Get a little bit more manly about things.
Now, have you noticed, so before I was using this cream I've been using this cream about 3 weeks, but before I was finding these weird hairs.
Oh, I don't have any rogue hairs yet.
Well, I bought this really strong mirror. Someone said when you get to kind of 50, you need to get a really strong mirror. And I looked and I had a mole with a massive blonde hair coming. Luckily it was blonde. Then my eyebrows, I've been having to cut them because they've been going a little bit Dennis Healy.
Oh.
Yeah, so
you
I think...
All- the butterfly.
Yeah, I'm literally becoming more of a man. But since I've taken the cream, I'm more of a woman again. It's going to be so complicated. Man, woman, woman, man. Anyway, can you let us know about your menopausal symptoms and your perimenopausal symptoms? We'd really like to know, wouldn't we, on Radio Gorgeous?
Yeah, like when you can't remember words and stuff.
Yeah. So we're suffering from that, girl. We sure are. So thank you so much for listening to Radio Gorgeous. And come share with us. We're always there for you. info@radiogorgeous.com. Thank you so much, Donna.
Bye.
Thank you so much to all our guests this week. This is the Radio Gorgeous production, Radio Gorgeous 2014.
When a storm is due, I like potato chips, moonlight motor trips. How about you? I'm mad about good books. Can't get my fill. And James Durante's looks give me a thrill. Holding hands in the movie show when all the lights are low. May not be new, but I like it. How about you? I like New York in June. How about you? I like a Gershwin tune. How about you? I love a fireside when a storm is due. How about you? I'm mad about good books. Can't get my fill. show when all the lights are low may not be new, but I like it. I like it. I like it. How about you?